I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. Great to be back after a week away. Last week, I was traveling on the East Coast with my family for Thanksgiving, for my daughter's college visits, and was really in the heart of Hurricane Sandy's storm damage. Was in New York City, was in Connecticut, not in New Jersey, but saw enough evidence of what happened a month ago to be completely floored by the damage. I was in Westport, Connecticut for a couple of days over Thanksgiving, and there were so many trees uprooted, huge, giant trees just on their side, like so many toothpicks and roots hanging out in dirt. It was just amazing. And along the coast, along the water there on the Sound, homes were still without power, damaged, you know, for blocks on end where the water came up over the beach and washed down streets or residential areas. It was really quite amazing. And just power still out in many places, people still talking about it, and it's been an entire month. Back in Hoboken, the PATH train system is still not working. They say it's going to be several weeks. For those of you in the New York, Connecticut, New Jersey area, you know what I'm talking about. But as a Californian, seeing this, you know, for the first time close up, it just really hit home to me, the force of Mother Nature, of Hurricane Sandy, and of course, tying that to climate change, what we can expect more of if we don't learn the lessons here, and even if we do, it's still going to be, quote, baked in for the next 50 years. So a big wake-up call to anyone who is concerned about our weather, our climate, our future. So just wanted to share that, and great to be back this week. In our second half, I'm very excited to have the producer of an exciting and important new documentary out. It's called Chasing Ice. It is changing minds. It is changing lives. We're going to tell you about that with the producer and director of that film, Jeff Orlowski, coming up in the second half. In the first half of the program, really pleased to have two young ecopreneurs, as I call them, on the show. Happened to meet one of them, Natalie Fleming, a couple of weeks ago when I spoke, and she told me about what she's doing with Eco Scraps, and then she also told me about her friend, Nikhil Arora, and they're both on the line now to tell me about what they've done, both inspired by their college education to help green our world. So thanks for joining me, Natalie and Nikhil.
Thanks for having us on. I appreciate it.
So, Natalie, we met a couple of weeks ago at the kickoff of the Green Fest in San Francisco. Also, it was a fundraiser for Hurricane Sandy. I was fired up. A lot of people were fired up about what's going on with our weather, with the climate, what we need to do about it, what the media is covering, what they're not covering. So we kind of became fast friends over email. And when I learned about your project, I said, you know, this deserves to be on the program. I love to shine the spotlight and put the microphone in front of people who are doing great green things in our world, especially young people. And you both have amazing stories, so really pleased to bring them to our listeners. Natalie Fleming started Back to the Roots a couple of years ago, and they are going to talk about how you can actually grow your own mushroom garden and also help get rid of food waste in a very positive way. And then we're going to also talk to Nikhil, who's going to tell you about what they've done with their, I guess it's Mushrooms is Nikhil's project and Eco Scraps is Natalie's project. You guys are confusing me, so I'll let you describe it. I want to just mention that Nikhil was named one of Business Week's top 25 entrepreneurs under the age of 25, so that alone is pretty amazing. Natalie, tell us a little bit about your background. What inspired you to go out and do what?
Sure. Well, I recently graduated from the School of Sustainability at Arizona State University, and there, you know, I studied everything from renewable energy to policy and everything in between, really, you know, relating to the broader context of sustainability. So something that was always very important to me personally was, you know, finding ways to handle waste. So I kind of took on roles, you know, leading zero waste events and things like that. And so it was really a natural fit when I graduated to start working for Eco Scraps. And what we do is we collect produce waste from grocery stores, Costco, you know, places like that, and, you know, diverting that from the landfill and making a really valuable compost and other organic garden products out of it. So it's been really exciting to be a part of.
I know food waste is a tremendous problem. Any idea, you know, how much produce is wasted every day? Do you have any statistics for those who may not be aware that, you know, what you reject because it may be a little bit round or have too many marks on it, you know, where that ends up going at the end of the day? I would hate to actually see it, but I can imagine.
Exactly. Yeah, so it actually accounts for about 40% of our total waste that's going to the landfill. So that evens out to be about 34 million tons. And it's just really significant because not only are we able to use that waste, but we're able to really divert a ton of emissions, which is something that people don't necessarily think about. You know, when food waste goes to the landfill and sits, it's emitting methane, which we know is, you know, about 20 times more damaging than carbon dioxide. So when you're able to not only, again, you know, divert that waste, but also, you know, get rid of those emissions, or at least capture them in the composting process and use them for something valuable, it's great.
I have your bio in front of me, and you went to Arizona State University, as you mentioned there, where you were leading a zero waste campaign. That's one of the greener campuses in the country, isn't it?
Yeah, so the school sustainability there is actually, it was the first in the nation. There are some that have sort of followed suit since then, but, you know, yeah, in addition to just the academic element, there is actually a plan in place to not only achieve zero waste, but carbon neutrality within the next decade. So I would definitely say it's very forward moving.
And how are you going to scale up your project? I hope you have plans to expand it.
Yeah, so the company is actually based out of Utah right now, but as we've expanded into more of the western United States, we've actually started partner facilities with, you know, pre-existing compost and soil sort of companies so that we can kind of contract out to them and not only utilize that, you know, that infrastructure that they already have in place, but keep it more local because there's food waste everywhere and we would like to keep that you know, food system and just sort of as local as we possibly can. So that's the model that we're looking at as we expand further east.
I was just, as I mentioned at the top of the show, visiting college campuses. We were at Boston University, at Northeastern in Boston, at Emerson College, NYU, and Eugene Lang in New York City. And I saw tours of all the student unions and the cafeterias. So many students, so much food eaten on the run, so much coffee, so many coffee cups. This seems like a really good place to start waste prevention and have zero waste programs. Any sense of how many universities and colleges around the country have composting programs in place?
That's a great question. It's hard to say because it's definitely something that's a hot topic right now that's happening all the time. So I know for ASU, they actually just recently started working on the composting element this fall because although, you know, the university had wanted to move in that direction and knew they needed to for a long time, there are a lot of, you know, a lot of obstacles in the way. So in Arizona in particular, there are actually legal issues where, you know, food waste is considered legally to be a part of the waste stream that legally has to go to the landfill. So it's things like that you have to work around, you have to be really creative with. So it's hard to say, but there are organizations out there that sort of organize around that. There's what's called the President's Climate Commitment, where university presidents will sign on and, you know, really stay true to their commitment to working toward these and then network with each other and, you know, provide that support and encouragement.
Great, Allie. We're going to bring you back into the conversation in a minute, but I want to introduce Nikhil Arora, who co-founded Back to the Roots, and that was after he was headed into the corporate world of investment banking and consulting, instead became a full-time urban mushroom farmer after coming across the idea in class that gourmet mushrooms can grow entirely on recycled coffee grounds. I've been covering the waste beat for 15 years, started with Trash Talk Minutes on KCBS, and I have never heard of this. I did not realize that you could grow mushrooms in coffee beans. How did you ever stumble upon that invention?
Yeah, it was a funny story. And by the way, thank you so much for having me on. So it's awesome to be on the show. And it was about 2.5 years ago now. It was actually last semester in college, and it was totally random because Alex, my friend who I started this with, and I were both undergrad business students, like no background in anything to do with food or agriculture. He was going to invest in banking. I was going into consulting, the whole corporate route. And, you know, 2 months before graduation, we're in a business ethics class, and we heard our professor bring up this fact, talk about sustainability, that you could possibly grow mushrooms on coffee grounds. It's one sentence he brought up, and something about that inspired both of us. Alex and I, we didn't know each other at the time, but we both reached out separately and said, hey, that's kind of cool. Do you have any more information? And he was like, honestly, I have no idea, but this other kid asked me about it too. And he just linked the both of us up, and that's kind of we got started and turned Alex's fraternity kitchen into a mini science experiment and grew some test buckets and ended up getting some support from Whole Foods and a small 5K grant from our chancellor and said, forget investment banking, forget consulting, full-time urban mushroom farming it is, and dove into it.
Is that because you think you can make more money doing this, or because you really want to help green your world and your future?
We were just so inspired by the idea. Like you could, it's still to this day. Like we collect now 40,000 pounds a week of coffee ground waste that's being thrown away, and like it's just something that still gets me so pumped up. Like our whole team, our warehouse, our product, everything we built is kind of built off of what was trash. You know, like every morning you see this massive mound of trash come in. It was, you know, tons of these bags of coffee grounds going to the landfill. And I think since day one, we were just inspired by the idea of, like, turning waste into food and waste into jobs. We're out here in Oakland, and it's been fun to kind of see the impact you can make with it.
Are you in most states around the country, and how can people, you know, can they get
your kids? We're based out of Oakland in Northern California, and we actually do all of our manufacturing out here, and we work about 38 cafes now across the Bay Area, collect all the coffee grounds, and we started off growing the fresh mushrooms to sell, and then along the way, people kept on coming up to us and asking us, like, yeah, it's kind of cool, but can we do it ourselves? And we ended up launching these grow-at-home mushroom kits now to kind of let people grow their own food at home, and it's all using recycled coffee grounds. So we now sell these little brown boxes where people can kind of open them up and grow their own fresh oyster mushrooms in just in 10 days, like in their kitchen or classroom or, you know, place like that. And we sell those nationwide now across Whole Foods and Home Depot and a lot of different places. So people can kind of get into this whole, you know, project by picking up a kit and growing their own food at home now off of it.
Now, what if you're like me? I'm green just about everywhere, inside and out, except my thumb. I do not have a green thumb. I have a brown thumb. Is it pretty foolproof? Is it pretty easy to do this, if you don't let your plants get water properly?
That's the beauty of the whole thing. So I think neither Alex had any background in farming, and that's why we fell so in love with it, because they grow in just 10 days, and all you got to do is, like, mist them twice a day. So you put it by a windowsill and literally just spray it, like, breakfast time, dinner time, and in 10 days you get your first crop of fresh oyster mushrooms out of the box. And it's, like, by far, you know, I think we get such a cool response from, like, families and kids, too, because you tell kids, like, grow tomatoes in 90 days, it's a lifetime for them. And in 10 days, though, it's, like, something they get excited about. And, you know, it's a way, our whole goal is to get people who otherwise would be like, I don't have a green thumb, I don't have a big backyard, and hopefully get them into gardening and, you know, just understanding where the food comes from.
You know, I love what both of you are doing, each in your own areas, all related to food waste and reducing it and using more with less. And it's just such a win-win. And when I have spoken to college students across the country, not that I've been everywhere, but when I do speak to college students, it's really my most favorite, you know, venue, because there's something hopeful to be said, and that is the bad news is the good news. If we are here as a society in terms of sustainability, and we need to get here, my arms are spread pretty wide apart when I'm giving that, we have a large gap to fill. And you who are coming of age and going out into the not so, you know, bright job market, if you can find a way, I don't say go out and get green jobs, I say create green jobs, create green careers. Think about what we need to do, you know, to make our society, our culture more sustainable, and there's so much to be done, so many opportunities, that whatever you're going into, try to put a green angle on it. And you guys are perfect examples of just that. So really happy to hear this. And then the inspiration really does spread, doesn't it, as you've mentioned, that people get excited about it, perhaps more than you might expect.
Yes, I think that's one of the cool things, I think, for, you know, Natalie and myself and a lot of people, like, in our generation, is I think we all graduated at a time when the economy was in chaos, and I think just graduate time, like, there's got to be a better way to do this, you know? I think just all of us kind of with that sense of, like, I think we can do this better. So it's a cool thing, sense of, like, ownership over, it's time for us to kind of take control and see what we can do with this and hopefully do a better job, so.
And Natalie, since you came out of the School of Sustainability, one of the first in the country, is that a pretty crowded or growing, you know, area of interest for students?
Yeah, I think so. The school is growing quite a bit, and we're finding that more and more, even people studying, going along other lines of study like business, are at least picking it up as a minor or something. And I think just what students struggle with right now that are about to graduate is wondering what exactly they can do. So I think you painted a good picture of that. You just have to look at the big picture and see how you can fill in and how you can just make the world a better place.
Well, as I've been looking at colleges again for my daughter next year, I'm really pleased to see that many colleges and universities are now offering environmental studies programs that seem to be fairly new. So I guess that is a sure sign that there is growing interest, and just in time. And yet I'm one who says we cannot just leave these problems to be solved by the next generation, you guys and behind you. I think we parents and baby boomers you know, had a lot to do with causing this. Most recently, you know, we know about it, but maybe a couple of decades ago, not so much. So I really think we need to help you guys dig out, especially if we're going to, you know, live for several more decades. We have consumer decisions that we make every day in terms of what we eat, you know, where we live, how we build our homes, what we drive, you know, in terms of reducing climate change, but also reducing waste. I mean, we're such a wasteful country. And we do a lot of things just because that's sort of the way they've always been done. We were at a restaurant yesterday in Boston, and I could name it, but it doesn't really matter. It's not all that rare. And they brought glasses of water to each of us, which we did ask for. What we didn't ask for was straws. So they bring straws in paper, straws made from petroleum products. Why do grown-ups need straws? And if I want one, I would ask for one. And so that was put on the table. And I asked why they do it, and they said, well, that's just kind of the way we've always done it. Then I was flying the environmentally unfriendly Skies home last night on JetBlue, which is not so green. I'll name it just because I got so frustrated. And I know it's difficult to serve people when you're, you know, moving people across the skies, but, you know, 15 years ago I started trash talk because of a moment when I was served a cup of, you know, coffee, and then they brought, you know, the creamer and the stir and the sugar in a plastic cup and then a plastic lid, and I just said, what's wrong with this picture? And 15 years later, it's still the same, you know, service, and they don't seem to be recycling when they pick up the newspapers and the cans, and they serve you a can of juice with a plastic cup and ice when the can of juice is perfectly chilled. I'm sorry, I'm going on a tangent here, but, you know, it really just reminded me that we have, you know, so far to go, and that we need to have, you know, so much eco-education and really consciousness-raising still for the simple things like what I'm talking about. And granted, you know, straws and plastic lids are not necessarily littering the landfill because they are small, but, you know, it's our garbage to global warming and looking at our waste stream and how, you know, how we could do so much better if we really, you know, did put our minds to it.
Absolutely.
I've left you speechless. Oh, so I just want to applaud both of I want to applaud both of you for what you're doing, and hope you can, you know, spread the word that not only are these endeavors, you know, really noble, but they actually, you know, can catch on and certainly in McHale's project make a lot of money and be scalable. I guess that's the key, isn't it? Is something that can be spread around the rest of the nation.
Yeah, or just take it could be a small idea and just, you know, replicate in different towns as well. So I think as long as people are passionate about it, that's the biggest thing. If you can get people passionate about it, that's already making a change. So.
Great. And any final thoughts, Natalie?
No, I just want to thank you so much for having us on here today. It's been great.
Great to meet both of you. Natalie Fleming is a recent graduate from the School of Sustainability at Arizona State University, where, as you heard, she organized the university's Zero Waste programs and led campus sustainability organizations. She is now in San Francisco with the program EcoScraps. See, the Bay Area really is a hotbed for all kinds of eco-innovation. McHale Arora, also founder of Back to Roots in Oakland and also, of course, in the Bay Area with their project, which is all about using coffee grinds that would otherwise go to the landfill to be fertile soil for growing mushrooms of all kinds. So congratulations again to both of you. Keep up the great green work. And when we come back, we'll be speaking with the producer and director of the film just out called Chasing Ice. You're not going to want to miss it. It's already having a huge impact on even the most hardened climate deniers. Jeff Orlowski coming up in just a few minutes here on the Green Front. There's no reason anybody's got to take a fall. All we got to do is read the writing on the wall.